This lecture we will conclude our block on the, you know, on quantum transport and quantum Hall effect. Today we will continue discussing relation between topology and Hall conductivity. Right, so topological invariance and Hall conductivity. And Hall conductivity, and we will look at this Chern number, the topological invariant of Bloch bands that we introduced in a rather rushed way at the end of the last lecture. Moreover, we will construct examples of Bloch bands which have non-trivial quantized Hall conductivity in the absence of external magnetic field. Okay, so this is quite interesting. So this would show us that it's possible to have that it's possible to have quantum Hall effect in some crystal, okay, rather than in the Landau level. So, but first let's quickly go over the derivation that we did at the last lecture. So let's derive a relation between sigma xy for a field Bloch band and in terms of Berry curvature of a Bloch band. And we are going to see that the Hall conductivity is proportional essentially to the integral of the Berry's curvature over the whole Brillouin zone. And the logic we will take would be the following. So let's consider a Brillouin zone. So it's some KYKX. So Brillouin zone is some torus, right, in the quasi-momentum space, such that these sides are given by the reciprocal lattice vectors. And let's imagine that we put some particle in some quasi-momentum state and we apply electric field to it. Okay, such that it starts moving in the momentum space, right? And we know that that the particle acquires quasi-momentum at a constant rate, so it's just given by the initial quasi-momentum times the strength of electric field times t. But the question we're going to ask, how does the particle move in the real space, right? So what is its velocity? And to do that, so let's find velocity in real space. Let's just go by quantum mechanical definition, right? So the velocity operator is just time derivative of the position operator, right? In a standard way, it should be proportional to the commutator of the Hamiltonian with the position operator, right? Now I want to write this relation down in the momentum space, so which I can do in a rather simple manner. So I know that this would be essentially R, right, becomes minus E d over dk. Okay, so position is derivative of the quasi-momentum. So then I can easily calculate this commutator, and I'm gonna get that this is just velocity in the quasi-momentum representation is just the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the quasi-momentum k. Okay. So this is still an operator. So what I have to do, right? I have to find the average of this operator over my time-dependent wave function. And the logic is that I would calculate the time-dependent wave function to the first order in the electric field, okay, and then after playing with different quantum mechanical relations, right? In the last lecture, I obtained the following result. So I got that. So given that quasi-momentum is changing at a constant rate, time-dependent velocity is given by two terms. So first term is trivial, is just the quasi-classical velocity, which is given by the derivative of the energy with respect to quasi-momentum, right? And this is not to be confused with the operator, right? So you see that essentially the average value of this operator is not given by the derivative of its eigenvalue, right? And this is because as we are moving, we do not completely stay in an eigenstate. So there is a small perturbative admixture of some excited states. And because of that, there is this extra term which is proportional to the electric field. Okay, and so let me remind you that here omega is the Beres curvature, which depends just on the geometry of my eigenstate. So I could write in the following form. So it would be I d psi by dkx d psi over dky minus d psi over dky d psi over dkx. So notice that here the velocity is expressed in terms of just the dispersion and the geometrical properties of the eigenstates in my band, right? So this is a remarkable result. It tells us that essentially geometry is crucial for quantum dynamics in a crystal, right? Is important for quantum dynamics. So now using this result, I can go ahead and answer my initial question, so I can calculate the conductivity of a field Bloch band, right? So now let's calculate. Let's assume that some Bloch band is completely filled, right? And let's calculate its conductivity. So. Again, I would just apply electric field, right? And I would calculate the current. So, and the current, total current is given by the electron charge, right? And then I need to sum over all states in the Brillouin zone. Dky over 2 pi squared. And the integration here runs over the Brillouin zone. And then I should just multiply it by the velocity, by the average velocity at point k. And so I already have my expression for the velocity up there, so I can just plug it in, and then I'll get the following expression. So kx dky 2 pi squared, then I have this first term 1 over h d epsilon over dk minus e over h e cross z times the Beres curvature. So when I'm doing this integration over the Brillouin zone, what will happen? So the first term will be zero, right? This is because I'm integrating derivative of some function over over a closed region, right? So first term is zero, or, right, alternatively, this tells you that if you have a field band, right, then you know that it doesn't carry doesn't carry current along electric field, right? So this is should be reminiscent of the of the Bloch oscillations in crystal, right? So did you guys learn about this, about Bloch oscillations? No? Okay, so let me briefly remind you, because this is quite a simple and important phenomenon. So, right, so a little reminder about Bloch oscillations. So let's consider some one-dimensional Bloch band in a crystal, right? So then you know that the quasi-momentum is periodic, and that, let's say, band looks like that, right? Then the statement is that such a band cannot carry current. Okay, so and this is because, you see, if you try to apply electric field, right, so the quasi-momentum would change, but then it would come back to where it started, right? Such that you see that the electron would spend half the time moving one way and half the time moving the other way. So on average, it will carry no current. Okay, but of course it would do some periodic motion in real space, right? And this is the phenomenon of Bloch oscillations, and it makes sense, right? In view of this phenomenon, that if you have a field Bloch band, right, it will not carry any current either, because you're automatically averaging since the band is filled, right? So half of them would carry positive current, half of them would carry negative current. However, the Berry curvature term does not have to give you zero, right? So it's given by, I can rewrite it in the following form. So let me actually rewrite it like that. So let me separate the term, which is E cross Z, right? And then it's E squared over H integral dkx dky over 2 pi omega of k. Okay? So this is an interesting result, right? It tells you that a field band has vanishing longitudinal conductivity. Sigma xx is zero, but sigma xy is non-zero, and it's given by this last term. Right, so sigma xy is E squared over h. Let me write it in the following form, times c, right, where c would be the integral of the Berry's curvature over the whole Brillouin zone. Right, so it's a flux of the Berry curvature through the torus of the Brillouin zone. Okay. So this is quite an interesting result. And next we are gonna study the properties of this number, right? And we're gonna find out that this number is in fact a topological invariant which can take only quantized values, which are integer. Okay, and this will give us a natural sort of deeper understanding of the quantum Hall effect, right? So why conductivity of a field band must be quantized at the integer multiples of E squared over H. So we are gonna show that this number C is a topological invariant. Which must be integer. And so, as you wish, qualitatively, yeah? You have a question?
I was wondering, on the top bar, on the left, why did you write down the things on the left? Because we didn't use them to derive the thing on the right.
These things.
So the operator of V?
Yes, we did, because.
Oh, so you said that?
Yes, because so what we did, right, so here I just repeated the logic because derivation, you know, of course it's interesting and I encourage you to do it. So, so essentially it's rather straightforward, right? So what you need to do, you need to take this velocity operator and then consider motion of a particle under applied electric field, right? And since the particle is moving at some non-zero velocity, right, it has some low probability of getting excited to higher bands, right? So we need to find the essentially first correction in the time perturbation theory, right? We need to find the first correction to the wave function, and then we average this operator over this wave function, right? And then you would find that this first correction would give rise, really, this is what gives rise to this Berry curvature term, right? But notice what's important is that all the other bands dropped out, right? So your particle got excited to those bands, but at the end of the calculation it dropped out, right? So your dynamics is set just by the properties of the wave functions in your given block band in which you're moving, right? Make sense? Yes? Yes? No?
Yeah.
Okay. No, there is electric field. Here it is, right? Yeah. First term is zero, right? So, this is what you got, right? For the current in the presence of electric field, of course, right? So this is essentially, you know that this term, right? So you see, this current, right? It does not depend on applied electric field because you have some states and all of them are field, right? So it's really the electric field, right, which makes them slightly excited and then gives rise to this term, right, to this anomalous term, right? So, and you know, it's clear that because of this Bloch oscillations argument, right, it's clear that the field band cannot carry sort of usual type of current, right, which corresponds to this term. Yes. Well, there can be, right? In most band structures that, you know, we are used to actually, you know, if you just take, let's say, square lattice, right? There would be no Berry's curvature, right? So, but as we will see in a second, if you have Dirac points in the band structure, right, then you generally get Berry's curvature, and it would be in principle different from band to band, yeah. You need to sum over all field bands, yes, right? Because some bands would be filled, some of them would be empty, right? And yeah, of course you need to sum over different bands.
So that implies, right?
So here let me consider a single band because generalizing to several bands would be straightforward, right? I know that I can just add their contributions independently. So now let's study the properties of this number C, and let's show that it's in fact integer. So how we are going to do that? So let's go back to our definition of the Berry's curvature, and let's relate it to the Berry's phases, and let's use the fact that the Brillouin zone is a torus. Okay, so let me. Do it this way. So let me consider my Brillouin zone, and let me assume that I picked some gauge for my wave function psi k. right? So some gauge, pick a gauge. What does it mean? It means that I find my eigenstates, right? And then I assign some smooth distribution of phases to different states in the Brillouin zone. Now, of course, I do have the requirement that, you know, since it's a torus, if I go, let's say, from this point to this point, physically these two states must be the same, right? But generally, this gauge would be such that they would differ by some phase. Okay, so, and we're going to use this fact and relate essentially the pickup of the phase as you go from here to here to here to here to here to the integral of the Beres curvature. So this is going to be our logic. So first of all, this integral of the Beres curvature, so let me express it like that. So let me say that C is an integral, it's 1 over 2 pi, right, integral of the Beres connection, so ax dkx, integral of the Beres connection along this side plus this side plus this side plus this side. Right, and then the last one is dA side. But now notice, so each one of these terms, right? For each one of these trajectories, let's say A to B, I in fact physically, right, I return to the same state because I've shifted by the reciprocal lattice vector. Then I know that if it's a closed trajectory, right, then my integral of the Beres connection is given by just the change of the phase, right? Just the pickup of the phase. That's what we've derived previously. So, for example, if for the gauge that I picked, psi at B is some, so it must be the same as wave function at A, right? But I could have some extra phase. Then I would see that integral of A to B AX DKX, right, is simply this phase theta 1. And let me repeat this logic for all sides. So let's say phase I pick up along this path is theta 1, phase I pick up along this path is theta 2, theta 3, and theta 4. So then I would get that my number C is simply 1 over 2 pi theta 1 plus theta 2 plus theta 3 plus theta 4. But I can also use the fact that since I have this relation psi B equal to e to the I theta 1 psi A, right, then psi C equals to e theta 2 psi B, right, psi D equals e to the I theta 3 psi C, and finally psi A equals e to the I theta 4 psi D, right, if I use all of them, I would see that psi A should be equal to e to the I theta 1 plus theta 2 plus theta 3 plus theta 4 times psi A, right? So this tells me that this exponential, that the sum of all the phases I pick up should be integer multiple of 2 pi, right? So I get that this must be 1 over 2 pi times 2 pi n equals n, okay? So we've shown that this number is in fact an integer. Now, this has an interesting implication, which is the following, right? So notice that we picked a gauge which is not periodic, right? So when we, which is generally not periodic. So when we shift by reciprocal lattice vector, we have to pick up some phase, right? So you may wonder, so can we always pick a periodic gauge, okay? And this argument tells you that no, right, that if this invariant n is not zero, then you cannot pick a single periodic gauge throughout Brillouin zone, right? So this gauge should have essentially discontinuities in phase somewhere in the Brillouin zone, right? So if n is non-equal zero, right, then no single periodic gauge is possible in the Brillouin zone. So you cannot, right, you cannot smoothly parameterize the whole thing. And this is a little bit like, let's say, if you try to come up with a single smooth parameterization of the spin 1/2 states, right? You know that you cannot find a single parameterization on the whole Bloch sphere, right? You always need to have at least two maps, right, which map it on some on the plane, right? So or yeah, this is essentially the statement that you cannot, right? You cannot, if you have a hedgehog, you cannot brush it such that it's smooth everywhere, right? It can be, you have to cut it into halves, right? And then there would be something happening, right? There would be discontinuity, right, at the boundary between these two halves. So intuitively, this is very similar. Okay, so this is, you know, this seems like a simple argument, but this is a very important result, right? So really, we've shown that the topological, global topological structure of the Bloch states has a very simple physical meaning, right? So it gives you the quantized Hall conductivity. Right, so in principle, this tells us that if we have some field Bloch band, and if we vary chemical potential, right, let's say we have some Bloch bands, and you know, let's say one of them is non-trivial, has non-zero Chern number. If I put my chemical potential in between, and I vary it, right, the whole conductivity would be stuck at Chern number times E squared over H, right? So essentially, it will be quantized, right? So this gives us another proof of the quantum Hall effect, right? And also tells us much more why quantum Hall effect is such a robust and universal phenomenon, right? So it tells us that the non-trivial topology essentially leads to robustness of quantum Hall effect. Okay. So. Yes. 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 Yes, yes, good point. So of course, if I have, you see, if I'm allowed to vary chemical potential in the gap, right, this means I have to be filling some states, because if there are no states, then, you know, then I would just go from applying infinitely small chemical potential, right, I would go from here to here immediately. Right, so, or let me, let's say if I plot sigma xy as a function of density, right? As a function of density. So let's say at some density, I've just filled my band, right? So I know here I have quantized conductivity, C squared over H. Question is what happens next, right? So when I'm increasing density, where am I putting these electrons? If I'm putting them here, right, to the extended states, they would contribute to the whole conductivity. So I would get something smooth, right? But if I have some localized states here in the bulk, right, then I know that I'm putting electrons in this localized state, so they do not contribute to transport, and then the whole conductivity just gets stuck at is chord over H, right? So here, of course, to really see the plateau and quantization, right, you do need this order. So, yes. So this is, we are also adding them at the edge because we are bound to have edge states, right? But if you, you know, when I'm plotting N, right, I mean thermodynamic average density. And the contribution of edges vanishes, right? There are fewer states at the edge than in the bulk, right? So their contribution is of the order of 1 over sample size, right? So it's negligible. So I would fill them very quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does this have anything to do with
Berry's phase? It has everything to do with Berry's phase, right? So this is, look, right? So we've showed that the integral of the Berry's curvature, right, which essentially distribution of the Berry's curvature gives you different Berry's phases, right? Or vice versa, right? You could view it and, you know, if you know Berry phase for every trajectory, you know everything about the topology of your block band, right? Or if you know the distribution of Berry's curvature, you also know everything about that, right? Uh-huh. Well, so I've assumed that the Chern number of this band is non-zero. So this tells me that the Berry curvature must be non-zero, right? So it tells you that there must be trajectories for which you pick up non-trivial Berry's phases, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So any more questions up to this point?
Yeah.
So far, you see, we proved that it's possible in principle. We haven't constructed yet a concrete model, and we will do that next. We'll do that in a second. So now another remark that I want to make is so we've showed this quantization for the case of block band, right? But originally we were starting with the Landau levels, right? And that's how, of course, quantum Hall effect was discovered, right? So you may wonder, so can you prove the similar statement for the Landau levels? Because of course, you know, the Landau levels are slightly different in a sense that quasi-momenta in the x and y direction do not commute, right? Because you always, so let's discuss case of Landau levels briefly. So I'll just mention the logic, right? So you know that, let's say, When magnetic field is applied, kx and ky do not commute, right? So they must commute to something which is proportional to magnetic field, right? So it's not directly analogous to the block band. But I could relate Hall conductivity to a similar topological invariant, but I would proceed slightly differently. So what I would do, right, I would put the system on a torus in real space, okay? And I would study what happens when I am inserting fluxes, right? Fluxes in this torus. Okay, so as you know, if you recall this flux insertion argument we made, right? So inserting flux in the torus translates to the electric field in the transverse direction, okay? So this, in principle, studying the response to the inserted flux, right, allows you to calculate the conductivity, and you can go this route and you know, follow somewhat similar steps, right, and then you would obtain the conductivity in terms of essentially Berry's curvature, in terms of Berry's curvature of the many body wave function, right? But in the space of this inserted fluxes. And notice that the fluxes, right? So this thing is also periodic. If I insert a flux quantum, right, I know that my wave function must come back to itself. right? So here you can prove, and I'm not going to prove it because there isn't much time, right? That sigma xy can be expressed in terms of fluxes, right? Inserted perpendicular to the two cross sections of the torus, right? Essentially, d phi y over phi naught, and then I have the term which is exactly the Beri's curvature of the many-body wave function in the space, right, of varying this fluxes pierced through the torus. Right, so instead of usual Brillouin zone, you should be considering this magnetic Brillouin zone, right, where your variables are not quasi-momenta, but rather inserted fluxes. And this tells you that the whole conductivity of lambda level has a very similar form, so it's the same topological invariant, but in slightly different variables. Okay, so this tells you that it must be quantized as well, of course. Okay. So now let's return to discussing quantum Hall effect in block bands, right? So we've shown that in principle, right, showed that in principle sigma xy over field block band can be quantized at some non-zero value, right, which is multiple of V squared over H. So, but can we construct some at least semi-realistic physical example of this band? Right, so, because of course it would be a very interesting phenomenon if we could find some crystal which has quantized Hall conductivity, which is insulating in the bulk but has quantized Hall conductivity and edge states. So the answer is yes, and we can construct a number of models. General way of constructing these models is the following. So first of all, turns out that if you have Dirac points in your band structure, right, these Dirac points give rise to non-trivial Beri's curvature. And that you can already guess from the example of graphene, where we saw that we have a massless Dirac point, right, and it gives rise to the Beri's phase of pi. So we need Dirac points. But of course, graphene is not a good candidate itself because it's gapless, right? So it doesn't have block bands which are separated by the energy gap. So essentially, what we are going to do, we are going to learn how to supplement band structure of graphene with certain other terms, right? Which would generate mass of these Dirac fermions and the Chern number. And also need, so we'll start from graphene and we'll need to learn to add special mass term. But first, let's establish some general properties of the some general symmetry properties of the Beri's curvature. So which we would use as a guideline when we look for our model. So two symmetries which you can find in your crystals usually, right, are time reversal symmetry, which would imply, so you can check it quite easily, so which would imply that Beri curvature at minus k when you change the time, right, would be minus omega of k. And this you can get by just looking, you know, just go by definition. Start with some Bloch function at k, and then say that, okay, if time reversal is good, right, then I can take complex conjugate, and this will give me wave function at minus k. Right, so by by time reversal, it will tell me that, right, is also, so it has momentum minus k, and it's an eigenstate, and then I can plug it in the in my expression for the Berry curvature and find this relation. And another symmetry is inversion, right? So it's just a symmetry with respect to changing the sign with reflecting coordinates, right? Or changing the sign of quasi-momentum, which would tell you that if psi k, right, is a solution, then psi minus k should be also a solution. And this gives rise to a different condition on the Berry curvature, so omega minus k equals to omega of k. So these conditions are quite natural, right? So first of all, this tells you that if the time reversal symmetry is not broken, right, then because Berry curvature is an odd function of momentum, its integral must be zero, right? So if time reversal is intact, then, so if time reversal is good, then sigma xy is zero, which makes sense because we know that sigma xy must be odd under time reversal, right? So it makes sense that we confirm this result. And another observation is that if you have both time reversal and inversion, then Berry curvature is identically zero throughout the whole band. So at least, you know, we are looking for the band with non-trivial Chern number, so at the very least, we'll have to break time reversal. So in order to construct our model, we need to better understand the distribution of Berry curvature for a single Dirac point. So what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna, let's say, generally I will consider honeycomb lattice and some graphene type models. So if I plot the brilliant zone of graphene, right, so recall that I had these Dirac points living at the corners of the brilliant zone k and k prime. And let me just zoom in on one of these points. Right, and let me study what happens with the Berry's phases. So right, so this is my Dirac point. So we've established that if we consider some contour which does not enclose Dirac point, right, then its Berry's curvature is zero. Berry's phase is zero. Right? So for contour like that, right, geometrical phase is zero. This means that the omega away from the Dirac point of k is zero if k is not equal to big K. But if I consider a contour which encloses Dirac point, then we've established that geometrical phase is pi, and in principle it can be either plus or minus pi. In general, it's defined modulo to pi. This tells me that the integral of the Berry's curvature over small vicinity of the K point should be pi. So therefore, omega of k is in fact delta function, right? So it's pi times delta function k minus k. So it's a delta function picked at the Dirac point. Now, tricky part here is that I cannot, from this Berry's phase argument, I cannot fix the sign of this pi, right? Because, you know, Berry's phase, you measure some phase, you can only define it modulo to pi, right? So I only know that it's pi plus some integer multiple of 2 pi. So, and in fact, this uncertainty in sign is quite important, as you will see in a second. So this tells you that this example of massless Dirac fermion, right, is somewhat singular, right? All the Berry's curvature is concentrated at one point. And to make it non-singular and to remove this uncertainty, you need to consider adding some mass, add a master. some m sigma z in the Hamiltonian. Because then what it's gonna do, right? It's gonna spread out this essentially source of Berry curvature that you have and gonna make it finite. So how do we see that? So let's go back to our analogy with spin 1/2. Right? So I have my effective Hamiltonian HK now becomes it's some V times KX sigma X plus KY sigma Y, so just my kinetic term plus the mass term. And let's assume that the mass term is quite small, right? So it only matters right near the Dirac point when momenta are small. So then I know that if I could try to plot the distribution of this electric magnetic field in the momentum space near the Dirac point, right? So I know that if I go far away from Dirac point again, this magnetic field is in plane, it's just pointing away from the Dirac point. But as I come close, right at the Dirac point, it must tilt out of plane. So it can either tilt upwards if it's plus, if mass is positive, right, or downwards if it's negative. So knowing this simple fact, right, so it's again, right, it's like half a hedgehog, either upper half or lower half over hedgehog. So knowing this fact, right, I can predict everything about Berry's phases and Berry's curvature, because I know that now, for example, if mass is positive, right, and this effective magnetic field is pointing out of plane, then if I look at the Bloch sphere, let's say if I'm very far away, right, effectively this trajectory would enclose the equator. But as I come closer, I'm enclosing, let's say, some smaller trajectory on this, right, on the sphere. Therefore, my Berry's phase I pick up is becoming smaller, right, which tells me that in this case, omega Berry curvature is positive, right? Because if I'm enclosing, let's say, smaller contour here, right, Berry's phase is becoming smaller, and the difference is exactly integral of the Berry's curvature over this region. Okay. This is for the case when mass is greater than zero. Now, for the opposite case, you would find that because it's an oriented surface, right? As you come closer, the Berry's phase is becoming greater, so which tells you that omega of k is negative if mass is less than zero. But still, you know, now Berry curvature is smooth, but it's really quite sharply peaked, right? Because clearly the Berry's phase start depending on the size of this contour only if you come very close to the Dirac point. So how close? By essentially, so Vk in plane, right, should be of the order of mass, right? So Berry curvature varies at the scale which is proportional to the mass, right? So very, very small scale, because I have assumed that the mass is small. So if I were to plot Berry curvature as a function of, let's say, momentum, right, and those are my two, so I was talking about point K, right, so it's some smear delta function on the scale, which is this M over V, right, some small scale. So roughly, let me write it, so let me not worry about the precise shape of this smeared curve, but let me call it just. So I saw that it's pi times sine of m times some function, right, of the displacement from the Dirac point, and this is function is essentially a Brodmann delta function, right? So it's slightly Brodmann delta function. So its integral over Brillouin zone is 1. Right, so you see it's quite an interesting fact, right? So arbitrarily weak mass term removes this uncertainty in the value of the Beres curvature. Right, so there is some kind of discontinuity. So it jumps from, let's say, minus pi to plus pi. And this has very interesting consequence, right? So this tells us that sigma xy, that the contribution of a single massive Dirac point to the whole conductivity is simply E squared over h integral omega d to k over 2 pi, you know, in the vicinity of the Dirac point. Of Dirac point, and this is just E squared over 2h times sine of m. Right, and this is in fact related to the parity anomaly in the quantum field theory. So, but I don't have time to go into that. Now, you know, we know what happens with a single Dirac point, so we can consider some examples, right, of realistic band structure with Dirac points. So in particular, we can consider, let's say, the most trivial thing to consider would be to consider graphene with staggered potential, right? So as we discussed, so this is the simplest way to generate a mass. So you say that you have A and B sides, right, which are not equivalent. So let's say A sides, let me make them orange, and B sides would be white. Then I could say that sitting on an orange side cost me energy plus m, and sitting on a white side cost me energy minus m, right? So a staggered potential. So this gaps out my Dirac points. But of course, right, this does not break time reversal. So I know that the Beres curvature at the near k prime point should be minus Beres curvature near k point. So in this case, if I go back to this picture and ask, okay, so what would be the Beres curvature here? Right, so it would be negative. Right, so it would go like that. So it would be positive here and negative here. Such that the total integral of the Beres curvature is zero, right? So whole conductivity is zero as required by the time reversal conductivity. Right, so this simplest example does not work. So we have to come up with a mass term which breaks the time reversal and introduces essentially opposite signs of, essentially the same sign of mass in the two valleys, right, in the k and k prime points. And we'll construct such an example in a second. But before we go on, so let's think about this result just for a second, right? So this tells us that the contribution of a Dirac point to the whole conductivity is either plus or minus E squared over 2h. Okay. But just a second ago, we've established that the whole conductivity of a full band must be quantized always at integer, right? Total conductivity should be, right, this is contribution of Dirac point, of one Dirac point. Total sigma xy must be an integer times E squared over h. Right, so from this we can draw a conclusion that you can never have a band structure with a single Dirac point. Right, so this essentially gives you somewhat, you know, somewhat direct proof of the Fermion doubling theorem. Right, so if you have some band structure, Dirac points always come in pairs. Right, so this is an interesting sort of consequence of this result. So now let's go ahead and construct a model which would actually have non-zero Chern number. So, and let me, instead of this staggered potential, let me do something different, right? So now I want to break time reversal, and let me draw it in slightly bigger hexagons. Right, so I have my sites A. So first of all, to introduce a mass, I need some term which in the Hamiltonian which is proportional to sigma z, right? So this must be a term that is involves hoppings from A sites to A sites and B sites to B sites. And simplest option would be to consider next nearest neighbor hoppings like that, right? So I can hop from here to here, here to here, or here to here. Or I can do the same for the B sides. And let me assign amplitudes to this, which are T prime, right? So amplitude T prime, and you know, I also have to break time reversal, so I have to assign some non-zero phase, right? So because if I have phases, generally, if I have complex numbered complex phases, this means that time reversal is broken. So let me treat it as a parameter for now, but let me just try this form, right? This extra term to the graphene Hamiltonian. Then what you find is that indeed there is extra term which is proportional to sigma z, which looks like that. So it's sigma z times minus 2t prime sine phi times sum over next nearest neighbors, okay? Nu eta, nu I is next nearest neighbors. Right, so it's vectors connecting, let's say, this a vector to this one, then to this one, and to that one. Right, so those are my vectors, nu one, nu two, nu three. So, and you can very easily derive it. So, but the important consequence here is that you see this function is odd under the reversal of the momentum k, right? And you would find, if you calculate it, you would find that it is non-zero at the k and k prime points, right? So the low energy term generated by this is given by term near the Dirac point, right? So I just need to consider hz of k, right? So near k, I would get a mass term which is sigma z, and then if I do the arithmetics, it's going to be I find 3 square root 3 t prime sine phi. But in the other valley, I would find the mass which is the opposite of this. Okay. So here we should be a little bit careful, right? Because also what matters is the helicity of a given Dirac point, right? And the two Dirac points k and k prime have opposite helicities, right? So let's keep that in mind. But in the other valley, the mass term has the other sign, and together with the helicity, this would tell us that the Beres curvature in k and k prime points have the same sign. plus p times, let's say, function f near k and plus p times function f near k prime, such that the total Chern number, right, when I integrate over the whole Brillouin zone Chern number will be 1, right? So we've constructed topologically non-trivial band. So this was actually first. So this model is known as the Haldane model. So it was constructed. So Haldane proposed it in 1988. So this means, right, that if we find such a crystal, it will have quantized Hall conductivity and, as a result, protected chiral edge states. Okay, so this is quite remarkable. And so now you may wonder, so where should we look for such materials, right? So generally you would want a material with broken time reversal symmetry, so it should be some magnetic insulator. Okay, so candidates where to look would be some magnetic insulators, because so if you have some magnetic order and some magnetic fields, right, generally your hoppings in the tight binding model acquire phases, right? So and without magnetism, of course, you cannot get this states which are called Chern insulator states or anomalous quantum Hall state. So they have several names. So this is a strong result, and in fact you can use it to even go further and to ask what would happen if we add spin. And I don't have time to go into details, but turns out that you can if you add an electron spin into consideration, and if you consider essentially some slight modification of this Haldane model, you can end up with a situation when time reversal symmetry is intact, okay, but the two spin species have opposite conductivities, opposite Hall conductivities, because the spin up and spin down bands have opposite Chern numbers, right? So C up is equal minus C down, and this is quite interesting because this tells you that the time reversal symmetry is good, right? And there is of course no total charge conductivity, but there is spin Hall conductivity, which is given by sigma xy up, right, minus sigma xy down, so which is 2e squared over h. So in this situation, you would have essentially, if you think about the edge states, you would get for each spin species, you would get chiral edge state, right? But because Hall conductivities of the two spin species, this is spin up, let's say, are opposite, right? Opposite spins would propagate in the opposite directions in the at the edges. Okay, so you get counter-propagating edge states, which turns out they're also topologically protected. Okay, but this protection is described by a different topological invariant, right? Which is some modification of the Chern number to the case of time reversal invariant systems. And so this is much more recent development mostly due to Kane and Millet. Okay, so and in fact we just, you know, we didn't have that much time, so we just touched on this topic, right? But turns out that depending on the symmetries you have in your system, you can have many many different topological invariants, right? And you know, if the symmetries are enforced, you have more options for various topological non-trivial states with interesting properties. Okay, so let's stop here. So and
So are there any materials where those things were
observed? So so far, so there are some candidates, but so far there is no clean, experimentally good material where anomalous quantum Hall state is realized. Okay, so there are, however, materials which have some non-zero Berry curvature, so you can get non-quantized anomalous anomalous Hall effect. Okay, so there are such materials. Now there is a material which shows this quantum spin Hall effect, right? So this is some very very tricky heterostructure based on Mercury telluride and cadmium telluride. Okay, so this was discovered just a couple of years ago. Okay, guys. So if you have any questions about this lecture or you know in general about things that we talked about, you know more general questions, so please ask at this point. Yes.
So it's magnetic field necessary for that.
Yes, yes, of course, yeah. That's why I said that you need magnetic insulator, right, to look for this. So if your system doesn't show any magnetism, most likely doesn't break time reversal symmetry, and then sigma xy must be zero and Chern number must be zero. So we added hoppings between AA and BB, right? But such hoppings that break time reversal, so they have phases. So that's important, right?
Did we allow complex hopping terms
before?